Welcome to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. It's football playoff night, so you're probably not listening to me live because you're doing what I'm doing. You're watching the game. Of course, I'm doing it with the sound down. This is where the past meets the future, Earth Explorers. In here, the results are always positive. You might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will safely be traveling with us. Lots of good, interesting stories going on this week. We want you to be part of it. So if you're close to a phone, our toll-free number anywhere in the United States or North America is 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, you can get to us at 530-413-9537. 530-413-9537. If you want to slip out, watch the game with the sound down, that's fine. You can put it on your Bluetooth by dialing 805-399-1000. 805-399-1000. By the way, New England just kicked a field goal. Then you have to dial the passcode 769-608-POUND. 769-608-POUND. And then you can listen all night, all 3 hours of X Squared Radio by using your cell phone. The solar wind tonight is 380 kilometers per second, and the proton count is a pretty robust 2.2 protons per cubic centimeter. There are three sunspot clusters barely visible on the sun today. Giant 1659 slips over the western limb today without punching us too hard. A coronal mass ejection did hit Earth yesterday. The weak impact did not trigger a full-fledged geomagnetic storm, as suspected, but it did illuminate the Arctic Circle with auroras, which were quite spectacular. When the sun goes down tonight, and it already is here on the East Coast, step outside and look east. The Moon and Jupiter are converging for a tight conjunction. On Monday evening, it'll really be great. Most sky watchers will see the two bright bodies just a fraction of a degree apart. Observers in parts of South America will witness an even closer encounter, which we call an occultation, in which the moon passes directly in front of Jupiter. Tonight we have some varied stories. Some of them are quite earth-shaking. And they're earth-shaking in a not a literal sense, of course, but with respect to human activities, there's a lot going on. Some of it is very suspicious, and some of it has the potential of being very bad. We'll try to cover it in a positive way. I've got a shout-out to James Gilliland tonight. So there's a possibility he may come on and discuss one of them with me. He posted something interesting on my Facebook. If you haven't been to my Facebook, you need to fasten your seatbelt because the posts are going so fast that you really have to hold on to the screen because it's just flowing. Lots and lots of stuff on there in response to some articles that I grabbed and made some comments about, and they're pretty powerful. You know the old adage, he who owns the gold makes the rules, right? That's kind of a play off the golden rule, which is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Have you had much of that lately? I didn't think so. Mostly it's he who owns the gold makes the rules. Well, increasingly, countries that do own the gold are taking major steps to make sure that they hold the gold they own. Following a physical audit of their gold for the first time in 50 years, back in November, Germany's central bank announced Wednesday it will repatriate gold reserves held at the New York Fed and the Banque de France in order to have the ability to exchange gold for currency within a short space of time. We would call that a quick sale. You know, it's difficult to sell something when it's locked in someone else's vault. And quite frankly, the Central Bank of Germany was a little suspicious. Everybody said, oh, sure, our gold's nice and safe and sound in the Fed Bank of New York. And then, if you'll remember, last week we had the indomitable David Martin, author of the book Coup d'Etat, on our program. Now, the book is a novel, to be sure, but David Martin is an international high-level consultant on financial transparency and creative financial instruments for very large, shall we say, country-size investments and securitization. Now, when you're working at that level and you're rubbing shoulders with people and you're listening to agents and you're listening to planning and brainstorming at a very high level, you can't just very well, you know, violate that trust and say, gee, you know, this is what Hans told me in this meeting. They're going to go after the Nakatomi Tower and they're going to take $600 million in bearer bonds by breaking into the safe. No, you can't do that. But you can write a novel and you can change the names to protect the guilty. And you could tell a story, and that's what he did. And the story was true. But the characters were fictional. The places were accurate. And one of the scenarios in the book is the robbing of the Fed by flooding the subway tunnel that goes directly beneath it. Now, did that or did that not happen, my friends? Yes, it did. But it didn't happen before November. No, 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 no. It happened during Hurricane Sandy or Tropical Storm Sandy. And they sort of set it up. They said, ah, you know, we're going to close the tunnel if it floods. And sure enough, the water ran in there and the darn thing flooded. I guess the pumps weren't working that day. In any case, the doors were closed at either end of the tunnel and Germany got very nervous. And so now officials at the Bundesbank indicated they have no intention of selling the gold, but acknowledge the move is preemptive in a case, well, in case of a currency crisis hits the European Monetary Union. While they tried to minimize the importance of the move at the Bundesbank, repatriating gold is a clear indication of public loss of confidence on foreign central banks, foreign to Germany, which would be the U.S., and the integrity of the monetary union. Over the past few years, Venezuela, Libya, and Iran have also repatriated their gold holdings. Now, we already know what happened when they did it. When they did it, and these are little tiny countries with not a whole lot of gold, gold went up $400 an ounce when they repatriated their gold. Coincidence? I don't think so. The argument is mildly paradoxical. The officially stated reasons for the repatriation of part of its gold holdings is to build trust and confidence domestically and to have the ability to sell gold quickly if needed. I haven't had to sell gold in over 45 years, but now they might have to sell it quickly. Not saying we are going to. I'm not saying that at all. Just saying it's better to have the gold here at home under our own pillow at the Bundesbank. Specifically, the Bundesbank will be bringing to Frankfurt all of its 374 metric tons stored at the Banque de France. That's 11% of its total reserves, by the way. And 300 metric tons held in the vault of the New York Fed, reducing its share in the U.S. from 45% to 37%. At market prices, that's about 27 billion euros, roughly $36 billion worth of physical gold bars. According to the Financial Times, it will be the biggest planned gold transport in global history. Well, that is to say, if you don't count 700 barge chains of gold that the Spanish stole from Central America. Is this a big deal? Yes, it is. Make no mistake. There are those who are loyal to the banks who say there is nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about. Everything is under control, they say. Not to worry. Everything is safe. I mean, after all, according to their assertions, the gold isn't being sold. It isn't really changing hands, right? It's still the same owner. But I'll tell you, it's conflicting what the news organizations are saying. I'm going to play a piece for you. I believe there are six people on this panel at CNBC. And you will hear the first part of this broadcast is about something unrelated, which has to do with the quality of the stability of Capital One Bank. By the way, lots of you are familiar with Capital One. Great commercials, right? You also must know that Capital One has the highest customer complaint ratio of any credit card bank out there. But let me play this for you, catch you up. And I want you to pay particular attention to what those who are familiar with the gold trading world say this will have as an effect on the banks. Hold on, here we go.
Our market mystery, because this is a question that's been plaguing our traders all day here. The German Bundesbank is bringing home its gold, saying, quote, by 2020, the Bundesbank intends to store half of Germany's gold reserves in its own vault in Germany. The question is, why is Germany moving gold out of the United States? Why don't they trust us anymore?
Well, the Fed, Lower Manhattan, actually.
Okay.
Now, a couple things. So this was out yesterday.
Yes.
And I wasn't here yesterday. So I want to give Zero Hedge on
Twitter.
But you've
been thinking about it.
When it came out, and the conspiracy theorists, I get all that. This is a huge story, in my opinion, that is not a huge story now, but will be a huge story. And why is that? Because you have to ask yourself, why would Germany decide to do this? What is possessing them? What do they see that the rest of us don't see that requires them to physically move this gold out of Lower Manhattan and obviously in Paris as well, back to their to their borders? And I think that's really the question you have to ask. And the answer is, it can't be anything good. And if you think this is the first time, it's not. Because the wacko down in Venezuela did it a couple years ago, but people dismissed it because it's Chavez.
Well,
exactly. But if you think Germany's going to be the last, they're not. People will line up and do this, and you talk about runs on banks. Well, this could potentially be exactly that, because if everybody wants their metal back at once, you better hope, A, that it's there, and B, that we're able to do it. And I'm telling you, the act itself is not bullish gold necessarily.
I
but
have
the act itself says messages about what's going on in the world right now. Go ahead.
Germany owns this physical gold,
yes.
So why is there any risk that if everybody's pulling their gold out, that it won't be there?
I'll give you the exact answer. In when I worked at Drexel Burnham, this is now the Drexel bankruptcy, I think it was 1990.
Right.
And now you're going to say you're a real whack job guy. But
we had to
trading controlled the gold of central banks. It was their gold, but we had it. When the bankruptcy hit, everything was frozen. And although it was their gold, they had no access to it. Beeks can speak to this as well. So it's a lot better to have it in your possession than to have it in your possession and somebody else's
fault. But the gold market's the gold market's a little weird in that if you buy a share of stock, you have a CUSIP number, it's yours, it's in your account, it's all electronic.
Yeah.
That's not the way it is with gold. There's not necessarily a serial number on every gold bar that says Melissa Lee owns this gold.
Wait, so is there a thought that maybe there isn't enough gold in the bank?
Well, yeah,
potentially. You sound like a real conspiracy theorist.
Well, here's where you run into an issue, that gold is lent out every single day through the London bullion market. It's lent everywhere. So if you have everybody trying to come after it at one time, just look at what happened with MF Global. You have a lot of people that were involved in that, warehouse receipts, whatnot. It took a while to get that back. So you need to be concerned. I think the bigger picture is why is Germany doing this now? Well, I mean, they've had it here for 40 some odd years. Why today?
Maybe they've got their own vault. I mean, look, Germany's got 10% of the world's gold reserves. And to me, I don't think that this is going to be a catalyst to other people. I certainly don't see why it would be that big of a deal to give Germany their gold at a time when, in fact, it's not backed against anything. So, and this is the reason why people, this is why gold is the thing that people want to hold, because there's nothing backing gold. There's no mortgages. Mm-hmm. There's no
they don't
dollar
have to worry about the Soviets coming across, which is one of the reasons they moved it here in the first place.
Right.
I mean, you know, let's look at when they moved it here and why they moved it to the United States in the first place.
So you guys don't think it's a big deal?
No.
And the two inner traders do?
Yep. Yes. Outer traders say.
The Netherlands actually have now said they want their gold back too.
So you'll also be in the party.
Mystery.
For now, it will remain a market mystery.
All right, there you get it. Now, there are a lot of key things that they glaze over here that people miss. One of the things is, remember him saying gold isn't backed by anything. It's not backed by any mortgages. I can't believe that this is a financial show on CNBC where they're saying that gold is not backed by anything. Gold is what backs everything else. Mortgages are worthless. Mortgages are only based on the statistical probability that the people that owe that money will repay it. It is often claimed in the value of the securitization packages that make up mortgages, that make up what are called mortgage-backed securities, which is where they'll take, oh, let's say $5 million worth of mortgages on homes, and they'll package them together into one package. They call it SPV, a special purpose vehicle. And that package has a value because in it there are anywhere from, 10 to 20 homes, single-family homes with first mortgages that make up that package. And the probability of these people who have been underwritten by people like Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae or some bank that's doing a conventional loan is pretty good. And so because that probability is good, this mortgage-backed security becomes tradable. And that's what they do. That's why when you're making your house payment, 1 year you're making your house payment to Wells Fargo or Wachovia, and 2 years later you're making your payment to some mortgage company or Bank of America or Deutsche Bank. And that's why, because the service release premium is refunded back to the selling bank, and that's how they make their money. And depending on what their yield is and what their exposure is and what their liquidity needs to be, they'll hold on to or release those mortgage-backed securities. But gold is different. Gold doesn't change. You can buy the same amount of property today with gold that you could buy in 1810. It doesn't change. Real good for real good, gold buys as much today as it always has. It's the dollar that changes, not the gold. The other thing that they really didn't pick up on or elaborate on was that there would be a run on the banks. Now, they're not talking about you and me going to the bank saying, okay, I want my money. That's not the kind of run they're talking about. What they're talking about is these major banks, the Fed in particular, have vaults. And in those vaults, they have gold, and they rent the space in that gold. They make money on it. They get paid to hold on to that gold. Now, it's not the overhead of the cost of holding on to that gold. That isn't it at all. You get a little receipt, you know, sort of like a crime evidence cage. Yes, you have this many troy ounces of gold in here, and it's on deposit. There are only a few banks that do this, Chase and Morgan Stanley and, of course, the Fed. Other banks have to deal in what's called bullion. Now, a bullion is a GBT. It's sort of like an IOU that's gold. Now, it's a tradable security, and it trades on the stock market. And other banks like Merrill Lynch or Bank of America or your local bank often can hold on to gold bullion, but they can't hold on to physical metal. Physical metal is only held by a few banks. What makes the owners of the gold nervous, and of course they also said, you remember why Germany moved their gold there in the first place. It was post-World War II. Russia was on its way. At the end of the day, they took half of Berlin, sticking Poland and East Germany behind what they call the Iron Curtain, which didn't come down really solidly until the late 80s. Having gold in a bank in Germany behind that Iron Curtain would be as good as having Saddam Hussein moving into Kuwait and taking the gold from there. That's exactly what happened. So in order to avoid doing that, they put the gold on military ships and brought it to the United States and have held it ever since for the Germans. And the Germans, no one from Bundesbank, no one officially from German government ever came to the bank to see, is our gold here? Until November of last year. Now, doesn't anybody at CNBC or outside of the studio here at X Squared Radio in our undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains suspect that the reason the gold is being moved, and believe me, this is no small undertaking. We're talking 50 to 60 plane trips to get that gold from New York to Germany. Every single shipment has to be insured. Every single shipment has to be watched carefully as it's loaded, as it's unloaded. The planes have to be checked and rechecked. Nobody wants to dump 1/60th of 300 metric tons of gold in the Atlantic Ocean, now do they? It's a big deal, a very big deal. There appears to be a discrepancy with the gold that was left in the vault 40 years ago that makes Germany request for a relocation of that gold. There are no doubts left. After David Martin's book came out, Coup d'etat 12, truthfully outlining the larceny that may be perpetrated when that tunnel flooded, and then the tunnel floods, Germany is nervous about the U.S. debt and America's inability to pay its bills. Just remember what David Martin said last week. The subway tunnel that was flooded is directly beneath the Federal Reserve building. The flood occurred after the November inspection by Germany. That inspection may have been ordered because of David's book, Coup d'etat 12, which you can buy at Amazon. And you can also find linked here at X Squared Radio, wherein he discloses the plans to rob the Federal Reserve building using the ploy of a flooded subway tunnel. We shall see when the German supervisors arrive to collect their gold bars. The main thing to keep in mind here is that the gold price may be impacted. It's that serious. If the gold price is impacted, then it is going to affect other precious metals as well. Let me play for you another kind of, this is like a floor trading at the exchange. It's a reporting station, and there are a couple of reporters talking about this. I want you to listen closely to this one.
Knows of, because word out there is he was tweeting it last night, but the Germans are on their way with wheelbarrows to take the gold back home. That seems to be getting some traction. I'm not sure exactly why.
There's supposed to be an announcement on that. I did get confirmation that a small amount of gold from the Bundesbank would be moved from the New York Fed for reasons not clear. Oh, now I'm seeing a Reuters story that did break this morning. Bundesbank to bring gold home, plans to hold 50% of gold reserves in Frankfurt by 2020. So 300 tons are going to leave New York, 374 tons from Paris.
That's cool. Why is that?
Well,
green gold
not
is
quite clear why.
I bet you that's not a very big...
It's German politics.
Yeah, is that what it is?
I mean, because...
Yeah. Not they, German politics.
They want to have it, right? They moved it out of Germany because of the Cold War, right? The threat the Russians would take it. It's just the same reason most of the gold is sitting in the basement of the New York Fed in World War II. Europeans move their gold over here to avoid the war, right. And now they're moving it back. And, you know, there's something tangible and visceral
well,
about
exactly,
all
exactly, Larry. The German Federal Court of Auditors, which oversees the government's financial management, called last October for an official inspection of the gold reserves, saying they had never been checked. And then it said, to hold gold as a central bank creates confidence, quoting a German.
Wow, that is trust, to have never checked with the Fed about your golds.
Well, have you been down there in the vault, by the way?
I've been invited and I've never gone. I got to go. It sounds really cool.
Really quite extraordinary.
I mean, the conspiracy people say there's no gold in Fort Knox.
It's there.
Hey, Steve. Is there any truth to the rumor that Donald Sutherland and Clint Eastwood are going to be spearheading the movement of that gold?
No, but who's the other guy? Jeremy Irons apparently is going to be in charge of it. It was a movie about this, right?
It was Die Hard with a Vengeance.
They already did it. So I will be able to report the exact day that they move the gold, and I will break that news with my sources.
Yeah. Okay, we'll break it right here on X Squared Radio too. So now you know what the scenario is. Okay, the main thing to keep in mind here is that the price will be impacted. As I said, it went up $400 per ounce when Venezuela moved their gold. I have advised you to convert your 401k and your cash savings into silver for a few months now. The price of gold is out of reach for most civilian hedgers, but silver is well within the price range most people can afford. It varies. It goes up and down a little bit. Between $28 and $34 an ounce, almost on an hourly basis if you watch it very carefully. The mint, by the way, runs out of coins. It's now out of coins at this moment, out of silver coins. Many of the brokers are exhausting their hard metal reserves as people are following this advice all over the place. There are online sources where you can get silver in a couple of days and sometimes with free shipping. I use Apmex, and I also use a couple of sources on eBay who offer free shipping. I advise exchanging at least 75% of your cash savings for silver and keep the rest of your liquid assets in cash, but under no circumstances keep your cash in the bank. It is my assertion that the holidays are coming, and I ain't talking about Easter, and you don't want your cash in the bank when they close the doors. Even if you think you're FDIC insured, don't be fooled by that. If your money is connected to a money market account, in other words, if you have a checking account, you pay no fees on it if you keep a certain balance. That's because your money, if you read the small print, is tied to a money market trading account. If it is, guess what? It ain't FDIC insured. Only the original principal amount is insured, if and only if it's not tied to a money market account, not the interest. Also, they have up to 10 years to return your funds to you. I personally know a family that has had their funds frozen in the bank for 5 years, and the bank will not let them move it. They've sent attorneys, they've sent banking agents, and it's still there. If you make any purchases that accumulate more than $10,000 for a single item in cash, such as a car or a house or a motorcycle or something like that, the IRS is going to receive a Form 8300 on you. Oh, you don't fill it out. The place where you make the purchase fills it out. Just like your boss fills out your W-2 and fills out your 1099, the place where you make a purchase, even if you go in on a Thursday and say, hey, I'll give you $6,000 today, and I'll give you $4,000 next Friday. When you take the keys to that car, they're going to be sending a Form 8300 to the IRS on you. You will be required to show proof of origin for that cash. So make sure you keep your bank records of where and when you withdrew your money from your 401k or other account. If you lose your proof, you can be charged with a felony, lose your money, lose the car, and be fined for money laundering. If you choose a check, you're going to have to deposit that check in a bank and then write a check. Or if you get a cashier's check from the bank to make that purchase, you're in the clear. But you must deposit the money in the bank first and think about it By the way, if you pay more than $10,000 with silver or gold, you will still end up answering for a Form 8300 that is filed on you. It will show up in your tax audit. The IRS will come and find you. Your purchase will stay out there hunting for you for up to 4 years with the IRS. If they find it, they can go back 7 years. The law has been in place since the Patriot Act was passed in 2002. So if you think you have not seen a Form 8300 show up with the IRS, don't relax. They will come for you. Make sure you keep your records of the origin of your cash. And that means if you work for it. If you work for it and your boss writes you a check and you take it to the bank and you cash that check, you better keep a copy of that transaction. Because if you go spend that money all in one place, over $10,000 or more of it, the IRS is going to come looking for you. With the slight modification of the statute, they may not allow you to make purchases greater than $10,000 with cash, period. You see, without the serial numbers of the money notarized by the bank, you will not be able to prove that the cash with which you paid is the same cash you withdrew from the bank. You may still be imprisoned for money laundering. It's true. And you think you can change that into goods. For instance, you think you can go to a car lot and you can buy a car for $10,000, and then you can ship that car across the country or to another country, and they will pay for that vehicle through a bill of sale, and then they write you a check back for that. That's money laundering, and you can go to jail for it. Anything, horses, hay, cigarettes, anything that you transfer from one person to another can be classified as money laundering if the original transaction was $10,000 or more. I also want to send a shout out tonight to my folks at Truth Frequency Radio, Chris Geo and his wife. They are rebroadcasting tonight's program live for about an hour and a half to 2 hours. Thank you very much. I am a truth freak. Have been on their program a couple of times and enjoy it every single time. Great, great crew down there at Truth Frequency Network. We've been here at BBS Radio. This is our eighth year, X Squared Radio. As you know, BBS Radio is one of the largest, if not the largest, webcast network of talk shows on the web. It has consistently more traffic and more listeners in more states and more countries than anywhere else. And X Squared Radio is one of the top programs on this network. It is often the top program. That's because of you, the listeners. Now, some of you listeners have it in your mind that you can be a host yourself. We encourage you to follow up on that thought. And if you feel so inclined, please contact me at bagnew@x2-radio.com. And I will be happy to support you and pass your name along to the studio in Paradise, California, and see what we can do about getting you on the air. See if you have what it takes to speak to millions of people around the world for whatever time you want to. 1 hour. This is a 3 hour program once a week. And that's what we do here. I pontificate for 3 hours. You can contact me anytime with that. If you've joined us late, we just finished a pretty comprehensive piece on gold. And the reason we covered it is because Germany is all about moving their gold, 300 metric tons from the Fed Bank in New York, which is going to take about 50 to 60 plane flights, and a caravan of trucks from the Banque de Paris, the Banque de France in Paris, and they're going to be moving it back to Germany, where it can be under the auspices of Bundesbank, the central bank of Germany. It is a big deal. I know a lot of people are playing it down in the press, but it is a big deal, a very big deal. To move the gold is going to be horrendously expensive for security, for equipment. It's a big risk. Banks don't like taking risks. They don't like it at all. They're taking it for very good reason. Also, in the news is a story a lot of people missed. I call it Mindful Marines. Now, I have a lot of Marine friends. There are no such thing as former Marines. There are previously active duty Marines. Even though they're no longer active duty, they are still Marines at heart. So it has something to do with the mindset. It has something to do with the quality of the soul. By the way, it's still 13-7 New England over Baltimore. I don't expect that to hold very much longer. They have the ball, and they're noted for incredibly bold and aggressive passing, which they are doing right now, which I'm watching out of the corner of my eye. For you. I'm watching it for you so that you can stay informed to know who the other team is that's going to play the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl this year down in the Big Easy. Marines. Why do I hire Marines? Because when people work for me in various companies, they often say, I am a better person for working here. I enjoy working here. I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy working on the things that we create. We're always pushing the envelope with new energy technology, new vehicle technology, electric vehicle technology, and people like working for us. And I enjoy having Marines work for me because it is not always joy and happiness, peace and tranquility. Sometimes there's a deadline. Sometimes things go wrong. And sometimes we have a hill to take. And they understand that. Civilians often do not understand that. Everything is going along hunky-dory, and all of a sudden things are upside down and we have to hustle. We might have to work 16 hours straight to get a job done, and it has to be done first class. That means orders are going to be barked out and people are going to be following those orders. Marines are used to that. And when we take the hill, then and only then we crack the adult beverages and do whatever kind of celebrating hoorah that we do. The U.S. Marine Corps, known for turning out some of the military's toughest warriors, is studying how to make its troops even tougher through meditative practices, yoga-type stretching and exercises based on mindfulness. Now, we have always thought of Marines as being mindless, you know, like robots. Point and shoot. You put them in the barrel of the gun and you pull the trigger and the Marine goes racing out there like some narrow-minded, jar-headed bullet and rips the target apart. Not so anymore. Still tough. But Marine Corps officials say they will build a curriculum that would integrate mindfulness-based techniques into their training if they see positive results from a pilot project. Mindfulness is a Buddhist-inspired concept that emphasizes action and active attention on the moment to keep the mind in the present. You know, it's so easy to drift sometimes. Facing a record suicide rate and thousands of veterans seeking treatment for post-traumatic stress, the military has been searching for ways to reduce strains on service members burdened with more than a decade of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. Marine Corps officials are testing a series of brain-calming exercises called mindfulness-based mind fitness training. I bet you they call it the MBMFT. That they believe would enhance the performance of troops who are under mounting pressures from long deployments and looming budget cuts expected to slim down forces. That means that replacements are not on the way. You have to go back. Some people might say these are Eastern-based religious practices, but this one goes way beyond that, said Jeffrey Behrer, the executive deputy of the Marine Corps Training and Education Command at its headquarters in Quantico, Virginia. He says this is not tied to any religious practice. This is how mental preparation to better handle stress works. The School Infantry West at Camp Pendleton will offer the 8-week course starting Tuesday to about 80 Marines. The experiment builds on a 2011 study involving 160 Marines who were taught to focus their attention by concentrating on their body's sensations, including breathing in a period of silence. The Marines sounds a little bit like a Jedi, doesn't it? You know, fear is the mind killer from Dune. You overcome fear, then you don't experience anger and revenge, which is what turns you to the dark side. The dark side, indeed. The Marines practice the calming methods after being immersed in a mock Afghan village with screaming actors and controlled blasts to expose them to combat stress. Naval Health Research Center scientist Douglas C. Johnson, who is leading the research, monitored their reactions by looking at blood and saliva samples, images of their brains, and problem-solving tests that they took. Another 160 Marines went through the mock village with no mindfulness-based training, acting as the control group, killing things and breaking things. Results from the 2011 study are expected to be published this spring. We, of course, will be the first ones to receive that study and study it statistically, because that's what I am, a statistician. And I'll let you know what I think of the results. The latest study by Johnson will compare these three groups of Marines, whose biological reactions will also be monitored. One group of about 80 will receive mindfulness-based training. Another of equal size will be given mental resilience training based on sports psychology techniques. The third one will act as a control group. Results from that study are expected in the fall, Marine Corps officials said. Marine Corps officials decided to extend the experiment to shore up evidence that the exercises help the brain better react to high-stress situations and recover more quickly from those episodes. Behrer goes on to say, if indeed that proves to be the case, then it's our intention to turn this into a training program where Marines train Marines in these techniques. We would interject this into the entry-level training pipeline. We don't know where yet, so every Marine would be trained in these techniques. The idea is to give Marines a tool so they can regulate their own stress levels before they lead to behavioral problems. We have doctors, counselors, behavioral health scientists, all sorts of people to get help for Marines who have exhibited stress-type symptoms. But what can we do before that happens? How do we armor Marines up so they are capable of handling stress ahead of time? Lance Corporal Carlos Lozano participated in the 2011 study, taking the course during his pre-deployment training that also included catapulting from a helicopter in a simulated raid and enduring booming explosions in a mock Afghan village. Lozano said he and fellow Marines were skeptical at first. Some wondered why their rigorous combat training was being interrupted by a class asking the warfighters, that's what we call them now, warfighters. They're no longer Marines. They're no longer airmen or sailors or ground pounders. They are warfighters. To sit in silence and stare at, well, their combat boots, becoming aware of how their feet touch the classroom floor. I didn't want to do it, the 21-year-old from Denver said. But the exercise is also done while standing, stretching, and lying down had an effect, he said. He felt more relaxed and upbeat. Mindfulness based on mind fitness training, or MFIT, was designed by former U.S. Captain Elizabeth Stanley, a professor at Georgetown University who found relief doing yoga and meditation for her post-traumatic stress disorder. Stanley, who was also involved in studies for the Army, said the techniques can help warfighters think more clearly under fire when they are often forced to make quick decisions that could mean life or death, and help them reset their nervous systems after being in combat. Major General Melvin Spies said he was convinced after looking at the scientific research and then taking the course. While teaching troops to shoot makes them a better warfighter, teaching mindfulness makes them a better person by helping them to decompress, which could have lasting effects, he said. As we see the data supports it, it makes better perfect sense that this is what we should be doing, said the 58-year-old outgoing general, sitting in his office adorned with pictures of war and a 1903 rifle. It's like doing push-ups for the brain. I have often told people about my experiences, not so much yoga. I mean, oh, by the way, it's 14 to 13 Baltimore. So don't count out the Ravens just yet. We might not see New England in the Super Bowl. It's a nip-and-tuck game. Both quarterbacks are aggressively passing. The defense is brutal and keeping up with every single player. I don't see them playing a zone. If they are, it looks just like man-to-man to me. Third quarter, 5 minutes, 12 seconds left. I can say, excuse me while I take a sip of, no, tonight I'm not drinking grapefruit juice. I'm drinking apple juice, organic, excuse me. I often tell people, and I've trained my children this way, I raised my children this way, when you're going to face a difficult situation, or you're going to face a situation where you have, let's call it a mental jousting that you're getting ready. You're going to argue with somebody. You're going to make a case. You're going to defend a dissertation. You're going to get chewed out by your boss. You dread doing that. And what happens is you begin focusing on the now. You begin focusing on the moment. And I have found that's not actually that comforting. It doesn't actually allow you to say the right things. It doesn't allow you to say the things that you wished you would have said, say, 2 hours later. So I've developed a technique that allows me to put myself out in the future 2-3 hours, 2-3 days, and look back at this butt chewing you're about to take, or this interview, or this dissertation that you're about to take. And you know, it's always easier. Come on. After you get out of there, you say, gee, that wasn't that bad, but I really wish I would have said this. I really wish I would have told him to go. Whatever. I mean, you have better ideas later. And so I find that in meditation, and whether stretching is involved or not, also called yoga, which would be fine if it wasn't for all that stretching, your ability to reflect on an event that physically has not happened to you yet does allow you to be more calm in that situation. Now, can you foresee everything? No, that's not the idea. The idea is not to go into the future and say, what's he going to say? What's he going to do? Am I in trouble? Am I going to get fired? Blah, blah, blah. It's not that. It's to go out in the future, and instead of looking at the same event from the past or from the moment you're about to twist that handle on the conference room door, or even more upsetting, to close that door behind you, when they say, come on in and close the door behind you. The idea is to step out in the future and look back at that moment and say, you know, it wasn't that bad. They didn't kill me. They didn't take me in that room and beat me up with a baseball bat. They didn't snip off my little finger at the first knuckle with a pair of dykes. I lived through it. And then you can start reflecting on what was said and how you reacted and, you know, just generalities of it. very, very seldom will you be taken by surprise in these meetings, in these confrontations, in these contests, even if you're going to take an exam in school. If you look at it as though you're reflecting on it from the future. And so I have found, no matter what the situation, if you do that, there's no stress involved. In fact, there's so little stress involved when you're in that meeting, it can be quite unsettling to those who full well expect to apply stress on you and make you come unglued. So it can be done. If you really want to know how to do it, pick up the book that I wrote called Remembering the Future. I talk about it a little bit in there. It may help you with some techniques. And if you can't get it out of the book, I did have one person write me and say, but the eighth iteration, you didn't tell us how it works in meditation. Okay. I may edit the book because you said that. And I can do that because, heck, I'm the publisher. All right, I do have a Wars R Us update, but I want to go ahead and close out this hour. We have an affiliate who's just turned out to be dandy, and they're doing a great job. I can't stress enough how really great these people are. They're my friends down at the Food Investor. Wait a minute, I have an update here. One of my listeners has just sent me a very important message on Skype. Larimer County Sheriff Justin Smith announced Wednesday of this week that he will not enforce unconstitutional federal laws in a social media message criticizing universal background checks on gun sales. In case you're not keeping up with this, President Obama signed over 20 executive orders. One requires universal background checks in all states. You know, they're not required in all states. He denies he would selectively enforce the law, but would mount a court challenge to any law that he considers an infringement on citizens' constitutional rights. However, Smith's original Facebook post did not reference lawsuits as a remedy. In his Facebook post, Smith, a Republican, pointed to proposals that he would require background checks on person-to-person gun sales as a potential violation of the Second Amendment right to bear arms. The volume of the gun policy debate was elevated in the past 6 months by mass shootings at Aurora Movie Theater and a Connecticut elementary school. Barack Obama and Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, both Democrats, have expressed a support for background checks when guns are sold from one individual to another, which is not required under the current state and federal law. There is no law. There's a proposal, Smith said, when asked whether he would enforce such a law. I'm pointing out the holes in it. Let's see what happens. Smith posted on his Facebook page that in his capacity as sheriff, he will not enforce unconstitutional federal laws, obeyed unconstitutional laws, or allow the constitutional rights of citizens in Larimer County to be violated. Smith contends that universal background checks on gun sales would likely violate Second Amendment citizens' rights. I encourage thinking citizens of all political affiliations or no political affiliation to carefully and logically follow the shell game that is occurring before their very eyes. The only possible way to achieve universal background checks for private transactions of lawfully owned firearms is to register every single firearm in existence in our nation. Otherwise, the federal government would never prove the transaction of a firearm. Anyone who fails to go through such registration will be defined as a criminal by our federal government. That same government, which all too often has failed to enforce the current laws against criminal predators, will then start to discriminately target and prosecute law-abiding citizens who are simply exercising their constitutionally recognized right to keep and bear arms. Hundreds of death threats have been made against the president of the National Rifle Association since just the first of the year. There's a lot more to this. It goes back to our interview with Neil Kramer, which we did on what appears to be a very unilateral effort to usurp and undo the Second Amendment, to reinterpret the Second Amendment as, you know, guns are okay for hunting and maybe for, you know, home defense, but they're not to be considered in the same light as the Founding Fathers originally wrote that statute. That is to say, hunting is hooey and home defense is hooey. We're talking about a well-armed domestic militia to protect itself not against foreign invaders so much as against our own tyrannical government. That was the reason it was put in place, and that is exactly what rubs the government raw. They don't want you to defend yourself against them. They don't want you to have the same ammunition they have, or the same gun they have, or the same body armor, the same night vision scopes that they have. But that's just too darn bad, because that's what the Constitution reads. And if you ever think about taking over the American people by force, you're probably going to get away with it. Because I can tell you right now, if they came up my street, door to door, and said, bring all the weapons you have in your house and put them in this bin, and by the way, any food storage that you have beyond a week's supply, you will bring that too. Not a single person in this neighborhood will resist. And the neighbor of the neighbor will draw their blinds and watch it happen without saying a word about it. You know it, and I know it. Let's take a quick break. Be back right after this with more X Squared Radio.
Back
X Squared Radio, coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. Thank you so much for being part of X Squared Radio. We come to you live every Sunday evening from 8 to 11 Eastern, 5 to 8 Pacific, out of a very excellent studio in Paradise, California. Our second hour also being carried by Truth Frequency Network live. And don't forget our friends down at Asheville Magazine. Asheville, North Carolina is a marvelous place to visit. Lots of businesses there, and we're thankful to Verado and his Asheville Magazine that helped sponsor this program. Don't forget about our friends down at the Food Investor. Scott and Danny have created a preservative-free food storage program that allows their food, it's very lightweight, by the way, nice foil packets, no preservatives, delicious, costly, cost-effective, and it's a set it and forget it. It'll last and last and last. If you put it in a backpack or a food storage plan, you want to give something to your kids and grandkids that says, I love you. Give them the ability to feed themselves. Keep them out of the hands of FEMA. If you think they're going to bring you a warm blanket and cookies and cocoa and a trailer to live in, I got some friends in New Jersey you need to talk to. Go to X Squared Radio at x2-radio.com. Right at the top on the right-hand side, on the top of the affiliates, is our number one supporter, the Food Investor. So go to the bank and say, I don't trust you with my money anymore. I want it. Leave enough in there to pay your bills, by the way. Get about 75% of it into hard metal, silver or gold. I recommend silver because it's easier to sell because people can afford it. And food. You got those two things, you will survive. And you'll probably do better than just survive. Last hour, we were just getting ready to start a Wars R Us update. I want to continue with that this hour. Wars R Us is a creation from my latest book, which is Alienated Nation, The New Quest for Liberty. It's a chapter in that book. Wars R Us are generally the business of war. It is not so much, you know, will we defend ourselves? Will we defend our allies? That's not it at all. It's all the thinking and planning and enveloping that's done of various scenarios, planning things out and pre-planning things out and pre-preparing for things, and just generally messing with stuff from a military point of view. I'm former military. No, I didn't excel at it. I rather disliked it. But I didn't serve more than my first term, nor did I have any desire then, nor do I have one now. But I have great respect for those who do, and I know somebody has to do it. I think that war is generally, however, business. And as a business, it needs somewhere to go. It needs something to do. It needs a product to sell. It needs an activity to undertake. And when there is no army in uniform to face, and we're going to talk about that this hour, then they will make up an army. And right now, it appears that the armed American is the enemy. It's not just the enemy of other nations in the world. It's not just the enemy of those who distrust America, who have developed some animosity toward America because of the shenanigans that we do, pitting one group against another group, messing with the status quo, supporting rebels here and violators there, and communications and computer systems and just general shenanigans. It isn't that at all. What it is boiled down to now is we have a government that has stopped governing. They have a government that is now ruling. And there's a big difference. Famous conservative talk radio host that probably single-handedly, other than Major League Baseball, saved AM radio from Extinction, Rush Limbaugh, says Obama wants people to snap. He says the president seeks revenge. It suggests a background check on him. What a capital idea. President Obama's newly announced gun control initiatives are intended as revenge against many Americans as he's pushing them to snap, claims top-rated radio host Rush Limbaugh. I think he wants people to snap. I think Obama's challenging everybody's sanity, Limbaugh said on his show Wednesday afternoon. Obama is literally pushing people to snap, attacking the very sanity of the country. Obama announced a sweeping set of directives he intends will cut down on Americans' access to guns, setting the stage for a constitutional battle with states where lawmakers already are openly defying the latest power grab by the White House. His plan would demand federal access to the details every time an uncle sells a .22 to his nephew. Every time you go to a gun show with a gun you'd like to turn into some spending money, every single time a transaction is made with a firearm, he wants the federal government to be involved in that. It hasn't been that way ever. In fact, it's forbidden by the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Coming on the heels of a recent birth control mandate, Limbaugh noted, all of this is so in our face. Everything that people hold dear is under assault, deliberately making people upset. That is not what presidents do. But that is exactly what Obama is doing. In 2008, Obama made the bitter clingers comment, referring to small-town Pennsylvanians upset over a number of issues, saying, it's not surprising, then, they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. These are people that the liberals all know, Limbaugh said. They are the not very bright people that want life to never change. They don't want any progress. They want to remain cloistered in their archaic antique past. And when things don't go right, when there's too much change, when there's too much progress or progressivism, like when there's civil rights laws, they don't like it. When there's gay rights and gay marriage, they don't like it. When there's a kind of culture on TV, they don't like it. That's who Obama wants revenge on. Maybe he has an active dislike for the people he calls the bitter clingers. That birth control mandate was revenge on the bitter clingers. You want to know how to stop abortion? Require that each one be carried out with a gun, he said. Among Obama's 23 executive orders presented Wednesday, several are aimed at upgrading the system of background checks for gun purchases. If we're going to have universal background checks on virtually everybody who buys a gun, you think maybe it's time to require a background check on anybody wanting to be president? I would submit to you that we still have not had a background check on Barack Hussein Obama, alias Barry Soetoro. Interesting stuff. You remember on Fox News, there was a great little judge. His name was Judge Napolitano, not related with, by the way, Baltimore just did another touchdown. It was a very bold pass, threaded through the eye of a needle to number 81. And so now it looks like Baltimore is taking the lead over New England. I'm just trying to keep you informed because it's now, as of the snap of this ball and the kick, it is now 23-13, Baltimore. Just thought you should know. Looks like it'll be Baltimore and San Francisco in the Super Bowl down in the Big Easy. Anyway, Judge Napolitano had his own show, and one of the things that he was talking about one day were several unconstitutional moves that were being made by the administration. Infringements upon freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, different things like that. And right after making these very bold claims, although very correct claims, he was immediately and vociferously removed from the air. Well, he has written an op-ed piece, and I would like to share that with you momentarily. But first, I would like to bring Roland from California on the program. He calls in every weekend, gives us a California update, a great music aficionado. Roland, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. How are you doing tonight?
I know Roland's out there. Somebody's going to get to the button over there in Paradise, California, and he is going to join us. Welcome to the program, Roland.
Hi, Brooks. Can you hear me now?
Well, I know you can't hear him because I can't.
Brooks?
Is Roland there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. He'll come. There he is. Okay.
There we go. Hi, Brooks.
Hey, Roland, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, it's interesting. You said somebody asked you before, right? You.
Yeah, people. All right, well, these were bodily functions that got in the way, but that's okay.
Welcome that happens. So you have people in Paradise, California, right? And also Asheville.
What's happening out in California?
Well, here it is. I just got a market analysis for my area of my house. In this market analysis, Ron Henderson, a friend of mine who's a broker, gave me a printout. There are 284 foreclosures in the area of my house within a square mile.
Goodness. And what is that done to the value of your house?
My house is located in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles.
What has that done to the value of your house, Roland?
What's that? The values?
I've got a really bad connection with Roland. In case you didn't hear that, 284 foreclosures within a square mile of his house. That's got to have a financial impact on his home.
Oh yes.
And that's the way it goes. And by the way, there are about 2 or 3 million more homes that are due to be foreclosed upon any day now. Of course, they have been waiting until after the election. It's very important that they do this to preserve the current administration. But the banks have been holding on to these properties that have not been making their payments. And the people that own these homes are living in these homes, and they're not making the payments, and the bank is having to sit on these foreclosures and not process them because the administration has asked them to. Well, very soon, those couple million houses are going to hit the foreclosure market. And this little bump that you saw in the real estate market, you know, real estate's coming back, values are returning. Forget about it. You better save your money and get ready because you're going to be able to buy houses really, really cheap in a couple months. Just save that tax refund check you just got. And you mark my words. You wait 60 days, 90 days, and the next wave of properties is going to hit the market at a fraction of their original cost. Houses that once sold for $300,000, you'll be able to buy for $60,000 or $70,000. I am not exaggerating because I have personally watched it. Houses that appraised for well over $200,000 in neighborhoods of $300,000 homes selling for $65,000. Be ready, my friends. All right, Roland, are you back?
Yep. I agree with you 100%. This is why I'm considering listing my house, selling it off now, and then going back in after that bubble pop.
Not a bad idea. I sold my home right at the peak of the market at the latter part of 2005. The first person that walked through the front door bought it at what I had it listed at. I could go back today and I could buy that house for less than it cost me to build it.
Wow. Wow.
And I loved that house. I designed and built it. It was my 20th home and it was my dream home. And I thoroughly enjoyed that house and had the most marvelous living room and the most perfect location you could imagine. I planned everything about that house, and it was perfect in every way. And I woke up one Sunday morning, and I just got this feeling, you know what? You need to sell the house. I went and got my digital camera. I took 5 digital photographs of it. I posted it on a website called owners.com, and it sold 5 days later to the first person that walked in the front door.
That's great. Wow.
No realtor, and I put all the money in my pocket. I paid off all my debts, and I have greatly simplified my life since then.
Right. You know, I mean, I think you're right, and maybe 90 days could even be 120, but at some point the bubble will pop.
Well, the bubble has already popped once, but that was only the tip of the iceberg. There are still another 2 to 3 million homes sitting in the foreclosure cycle that the banks have been asked to slow walk until after the election. The economy is much, much worse than what people think it is.
Oh, nobody has any idea what's going on. I mean, the people I know, and the reason I hang out with the musicians a lot is, number one, I like the music. Number two, I like the people. And number three, they, I can see, are having a lot of trouble in their business getting gigs. I mean, it doesn't matter where they go. It's very difficult for them to get paid. A lot of them are playing for tips, and these are big names and people that actually know their business.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, look at crowdfunding, this phenomenon that has occurred that's sliding in between the grading of securities laws. You're not really selling anything to people. You're just giving them an opportunity, a bulk opportunity to donate, and you're kind of giving them some perks for donating. You're not selling a T-shirt or a hat or a movie ticket. You're giving it away for people to make certain levels of donations, a lot like churches do. And believe me, it'll only take a certain amount of time before the SEC plugs this hole. But if you watch the way crowdfunding has gone the last year or so, there may be 10,000 crowdfunding projects out there, and less than 5 of them are making any money. It is horrible the way Americans are donating to things right now because they just don't have the money.
Right. You know, I met this older gentleman at a place called the Cowboy Palace in Chatsworth. And Jerry, and I may be mispronouncing his last name, Gershon, he was friends with a guy named, Bob Hope bought the property and turned it to Corriganville. Did you ever hear of Crash Corrigan?
I believe I have, yes.
Well, he was friends with Crash Corrigan. And then Bob Hope bought Corriganville, and that burned down. Now it's a park out in the Simi Valley. Anyway, this gentleman's friend, who was a drummer with Guns N' Roses, Ron, he's producing a CD with other friends to benefit MS with a bunch of recording people at Chatsworth Recording Studio. And the owner of the studio, I understand, was the drummer for Rod Stewart, or one of the drummers. You know, these different people went into different things, production and all that. So they're trying to come out with this CD in order to benefit MS. And I ran into this woman last night named Diane. And she was friends with a guy named Don. And I Biet, I think is his last name, but it really messed it up. His name was, he went by stage name, was Captain Beefheart. She said that, you know, he passed away back in 2010. but he died from MS. So, you know, these people are trying to help benefit these people that have these illnesses. And they're doing it through fundraising.
Well, my wonderful banker out here for Merrill Lynch is a competitive mountain biker. This is a really, really tough sport, and he has managed to excel at it. And he rides for MS all the time out here in North Carolina. So I am familiar with the disease. I've had a close person to me who was a fledgling concert producer. I helped him put together his business. I ran a couple of concerts for him. He also died of MS. It was amazing to watch the spirit of this man struggle against this disease. It just marches inexorably through your body. And did.
My cousin David Still in Colorado, he does inspections for Mercy Properties, Mercy Hospitals. He was a pathfinder in the Army under the Bay of Pigs under President Kennedy. His first wife and his son died from MS, and he went through that.
That's really, you feel so helpless. I remember being in his hospital room, and, you know, and with this disease, it will eventually get to your ability to breathe. He'd already had part of a lung removed because it had become unresponsive, and so he was in his 20s, a smart guy, great spirit, and his mom was there, and as he stopped breathing a couple of times and then regained his breath, he didn't panic. He knew it was coming. He definitely asked not to be put on a respirator. He wanted to just pass. And about 30 minutes later, he just exhaled, took his last breath, and he didn't struggle. His eyes dilated, and he was gone. And if I think everybody needs to see that, needs to experience that kind of passing with someone with this disease so they understand what it means and how senseless it is. And there's a lot of research being done to try to prevent it, and they've made great strides, but they still don't have a clue how to cure it.
Right. And hopefully at some point, I mean, these people I've met that I now know, I think they're doing all they can to help fight that disease and many others. There's other people doing other fundraisers like Alice Cooper and Don Felder, and Felder was an old customer of mine with the Eagles. They lose golf balls in Phoenix, I understand, every Christmas for the after-school programs and do benefit shows. So, you know, a lot of people that can afford to do this are doing it, you know, and I think it's great.
Well, I do too. I just think I love the way people reach out to one another and have compassion for one another. And this is what America is all about, how we pull together as a people to help one another. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, and if people don't do that and they become too self-centered and only concern themselves with themselves, we're never going to progress.
True enough. True enough. But I have hope. I just have hope. I think that poverty has nothing to do with the serious quality of life in this country. We have been poor before, and we have been broke before. We've stood in lines before. We've shared bowls of soup before, and we will do it again, but we will survive because we are Americans, and we will excel because we are Americans. We have something in this country upon which it was founded that no other nation has and every nation envies. I think if we have a chance to export that spirit, that's the one thing that could change the world, don't you?
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. I mean, we have to show that we have compassion for each other before anyone in the world can look at us and say it's a compassionate nation.
Well, you know, I think patriotism generally is a dangerous thing. But to have the pride of freedom and liberty, I think, is a good thing. And when we give that up, when we abdicate our own sovereignty to another, when we allow a government to become the ruler of us, of our daily lives and our daily bread and our daily activities and our ability to move and communicate and choose, then it's time to take it back. It's time to take your own sovereignty back.
Well, we need to be sovereign. I mean, that was what the nation was founded on.
Well, it was. Yeah. I mean, if you go back and look at the original compact, it was a contract with the king to a specific area of the eastern seaboard. When they arrived, of course, it was the Hudson. They looked at it and said, I don't want this muddy, mosquito-infested mess. Let's sail a little bit further north. And they got up to the beautiful Boston Bay and said, hey, these waters are clean. The beaches are clean. The trees look awesome. Let's stop here. And guess what? That's where the American spirit was born. Because as soon as they chose another piece of land, well, the contract with the king was off. This is our land now.
Well, and therefore the Revolutionary War, right?
Well, no, the Revolutionary War was fought specifically because the founding fathers after the original Revolutionary War, the War of 1812 was fought because the Rothschilds wanted to force a central bank onto the U.S., and it had already run its 20-year course, and they weren't about to renew the charter. And so the Rothschilds made the statement that, well, fine, we'll force you to be a colony again. And they got the British Army to attack the United States again, and they lost. But they did get their central bank, and that's why the war ended.
So it all boils right down to one thing, money.
It boils down to the control of money. The money's always there, but controlling the money supply allows the bank to control the country. And that's where we have been since 1910.
And I'll tell you what, it's really going to show up now with these foreclosures. And if they, in California, I don't know what it's like back east, but in California, all these businesses that are moving out of California are causing a glut in the commercial real estate market of rentals. At some point, if they can't fill those rentals, how much longer those building owners hold out?
Well, they can't. I mean, the whole cash flow model begins to crash. I was handling a loan one time for an individual that came up from Texas, and he owned, I believe it was 6,400 apartments. Now, ordinarily, when a guy comes up from Texas because he can't find capital in Texas, he comes up to Tennessee and says, hey, I want a loan. I own 6,400 apartments. You would say, hey, that sounds really great.
Right.
The problem was that he had a 60 to 70% vacancy rate. The cash flow model didn't work for him, and I believe he ended up losing all of his apartment buildings. He lost them to the bank because he couldn't come up with the cash flow to get a loan for 6,400 apartments. Now, these were several large complexes, obviously, but the economy was so bad that people couldn't rent apartments. They were living in trailers and tents. And his buildings.
I wonder if we're headed back there again.
I don't think Texas is. I think Texas is doing fine. And now Louisiana has said they're about to end their income tax so that they can join the ranks of states that are growing instead of staying the same or shrinking.
Right. And here we are in California. They raised the income tax. They raised other taxes. And the people, you talked about the foreclosure market I told you about. How can these people afford to pay more tax?
Well, they can't, and that's why they're leaving California at a faster rate than millionaires are leaving France.
Yep. That's true. So before you go, I wanted to just tell you one more thing. actually two things. I met a band from North Carolina. You said you're in Asheville, right? You have somebody listening in Asheville?
Uh-huh.
This band is called Jive Mother Mary. The guys that brought them in all work at Musicians Institute in Hollywood. And all these guys signed in Jive Mother Mary.
Uh-oh, did we lose the call? He was right in the middle of a sentence.
Hey there.
Asheville is on the very western side of North Carolina as you're going through the mountains, the Smoky Mountains, toward Tennessee. And it is kind of an eclectic city. It's many people consider it a spiritual mecca for people in North Carolina and Tennessee. It has a couple of good universities, a small airport, great mountain living, but it has attracted this amazing kind of open-minded, spiritual group. Not so liberal, not so conservative, but very, very open-minded. Lots of great programmers live over there. Lots of great business buyers and sellers live over there. I think a lot of Silicon Valley day traders came over there and established a community. I used to have an office over on Wall Street. Yeah, no, it was really a wall. It was originally built by the people that live in the mansion there, built that, the Biltmore. Their recreational studio was downtown there, and they had built a wall along this road, which now is not there, but the wall is what gave that street its name. So it's Wall Street, and it was kind of neat to have a Wall Street address. Thanks, Roland, for the call. We always like hearing from California. Right now I want to hear from Andrew Judge, Andrew Napolitano, not related with Big Sis. Here's what he says. If you have listened to President Barack Obama and Vice President Biden talk about guns in the past month, you have heard them express a decided commitment to use the powers of the federal government, specifically the executive branch, to maintain safety in the United States. You also have heard congressional voices from politicians in both parties condemning violence and promising to do something about it. This sounds very caring and inside the wheelhouse of what we hire and pay the federal government to do, don't you think? But it is clearly unconstitutional. When the founders created the American Republic, they did so by inducing constitutional conventions in each of the original 13 states to ratify the new Constitution. The idea they presented and the thesis accepted by those ratifying conventions was that the states are sovereign. They derive their powers from the people who live there. The purpose of the Constitution was to create a federal government of limited powers, powers that had been delegated to it by the states. The opening line of the Constitution contains a serious typographical error. You know it very well. We the people. It should read, we the states. As President Ronald Reagan reminded us in his first inaugural address, the states created the federal government and not the other way around. Notwithstanding the Constitution's typo, the states delegated only 16 unique discrete powers to the new federal government, and all of those powers concern nationhood. The Constitution authorizes the feds to regulate in areas of national defense, foreign affairs, keeping interstate commerce regular, and establishing a post office, and also protecting patents and artistic creations and keeping the nation free. They're not doing a very good job of any of that. The areas of health, safety, welfare, and morality were not delegated to the feds and were retained by the states. Judge Napolitano's brand new book takes a look at how these American leaders kickstarted redistributionist ideology. Theodore and Woodrow, how two American presidents destroyed constitutional freedom. An excellent book, I am sure. Don't forget Alienated Nation, The New Quest for Liberty. We have two chapters on the very same thing. How do we know that? We know it from the language in the Constitution itself and from the records of the debates and the state ratifying conventions. The small government types who warned at these conventions that the Constitution was creating a behemoth central government, not unlike the one in Great Britain from which they had just seceded, were assured that the unique separation of powers between the states and the new limited federal government would guarantee that power could not become concentrated in the central government. It was articulated even by the big government types in the late 18th century, such as George Washington and Alexander Hamilton, as well as by the small government types, such as Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, that the new government was limited to the powers delegated to it by the states, and that the states retained the governmental powers that they did not delegate away. At Jefferson's insistence, the Bill of Rights was added to the Constitution to keep the new government from interfering with natural rights, such as speech, worship, self-defense, privacy, and property rights, and the Tenth Amendment was included to assure that the Constitution itself would proclaim affirmatively that the powers not delegated to the feds were retained by the states or the people. The Supreme Court has ruled consistently and countless times that police power, that is the power to regulate for health, safety, welfare, and morality, continues to be reposed in the states, and that there is no federal police power, period. All of this is consistent with the philosophical principle of subsidiarity, famously articulated by St. Thomas Aquinas. Aquinas argued that the problems that are closest to the people needing government intervention should be addressed by the government closest to those people. Local government. Its corollary is that all governmental intervention should be the minimum needed. No need for shock and awe by the federal government. Now, back to Obama and Biden and their colleagues in the government. If the feds have no legitimate role in maintaining safety, why are they getting involved in the current debate over guns? We know that they don't trust individuals to address their own needs, from food to health to safety, and they think the Constitution, to the contrary notwithstanding, that they know better. And many of their colleagues in government are the same folks who gave us Obamacare with its mandates, invasions of privacy, increased costs, and federal regulation of health care. They call themselves progressives, as they believe that the federal government possesses unlimited powers, and by the way, an unlimited checkbook, and can do whatever those who run it want to do, except that which is expressly prohibited. And even that is not stopping them. This brings us back to guns. The Constitution expressly prohibits all governments from infringing upon the right of the people to keep and bear arms, plain and simple. This permits us to defend ourselves when the police can't or won't, and it permits a residue of firepower in the hands of the people with which to stop any tyrant who might try to infringe upon our natural rights. And it will give second thoughts to anyone thinking about tyranny. But as I said before, even though the country is ablaze with passionate debate about guns, we want them and they want to take them. We deserve them. We have the right to have them. In our gun cabinet, under our pillow, under the seat in our car, we have the right to bear them. I can tell you right now that if just the police, forget about the National Guard or the regular army, if just the police came to your street and started on the corner, door by door, knocking on the door with an open search warrant to go in that house and find all the guns and remove them and the ammunition and the reloading equipment, as well as any extra food you might have beyond what they would consider to be ordinary preparedness. Not only will that household allow them to do it, but the house next to it and the house next to it and the house next to that will do nothing, nothing to stop it. They will draw their shades and they will let the police do their job. There will not be so much as a skirmish as the police with their dump trucks show up to collect the weapons, house by house by house. How do I know that? Because history doesn't lie. It has been done over and over and over again, country by country, all across Europe, Mexico, Canada, and it will be done here without a single shot fired. There are no doubts in this. One more thing I want to add. It's comments from our good friend David Martin, author of the book Coup d'Etat 12. Yes, it's a novel, but it's based on truth. Revealing the things that have happened may be what's prompted Germany to come and get their gold. By the way, it's now 28-13 Baltimore, just so you know. Just so you know. They're having their way with New England's quarterback. Baltimore's defense, just as strong as it's been all season. They're passing, bold and aggressive, and they're winning. In December 2007, as the U.S. and global economies were careening off the cliff, Fed economist Dave Stockton reportedly stated that the economic outlook for the U.S. economy was benign. That means generally non-cancerous. It's okay. Everything's under control. Go back to the mall. Take out your plastic. Everything is okay. And projections were unimpaired and on nothing stronger than many late nights of Diet Pepsi and vending machine Twinkies. What a prophetically ironic metaphor, seeing as Diet Pepsi has succumbed to PepsiCo's collapsing market relevance in the face of their arch-rival Coke, and Twinkies, the preservative-laden fluffy pastry, is bankrupt. And to that, the Center for Science and the Public Interest's report in March 2012 that 4-methyl... let me scroll up here where I can read it. 4-methylimidazole, that's caramel coloring that makes cola, you know, the distinctive donkey urine on a Grand Canyon hiking trail color, you know, that is a carcinogen, with the average soda can containing over 500% of the state of California's public safety benchmark. And it's not really surprising that we neither diagnose the condition leading to much ballyhooed global financial crisis, or have we taken any meaningful corrective actions to fix it. While most of the eastern seaboard was dealing with the almost storm that almost happened to almost dump a bunch of snow on us here in Charlottesville, the Federal Reserve set a new record with U.S. Treasury and mortgage holdings at a whopping $2.96 trillion. I said trillion with a T. And with Atlanta Fed President Dennis Lockhart's dire prediction that large-scale asset purchases are likely to be necessitated due to the sluggish economy in 2013, this all-time intervention record is likely merely the qualifying line for records that will be smashed throughout the year. In the Olympics of financial intervention, we've got our Usain Bolt without the Jamaican charm. Let the games begin or continue or whatever. Two wrongs don't make a right. That goes for Twinkies being sloshed down with carcinogenic Diet Pepsi, a GFC manifest in mortgage debt abuses being resolved with mortgage debt abuse, and the architects of a disaster being entrusted with its remedy. The fox guarding the henhouse, we would say. And while I'd love to delve into the precise economic policy issues illuminated in Fed's January 16th record-setting, quote, asset purchase report, I thought it might be informative to land this commentary a bit closer to home. The intervention of the past few years, suppressed interest rates and Fed purchase of mortgages, actually have grave implications for all of us. The penny of pain deferral in the moment comes at a pound of agony later. And ironically, this pain will respect no asset class, nothing, being felt more in its magnitude by those with the hoarded, who have hoarded the most. Most of us hear about the foreign ownership of U.S. debt, representing about one-third of the total public debt, with popular demoralization of certain large Asian holders, which is a fancy way of saying Chinese. The Federal Reserve and U.S. public institutions, including government-sponsored enterprises, hold just over 40%, while the individual consumer investor, represented by pension funds, insurance companies, mutual funds, etc., hold about 12%. On the present trajectory, we could see the Federal Reserve owning about one-third of the mortgage market by 2014 if it continues its current purchasing policy with, I might add, nothing but printed money, and about two-thirds of the longer maturity debt issued by the Treasury. Unlike investors who invest earned dollars and seek investment returns for actuarial income required in their projection of the monetary futures needs they'll face, the Fed's asset purchasing behavior is based on its ability to buy using its own whimsical capacity to buy. Far from a fair market buyer, the presence of a fiat buyer actually alters price dynamics. That's what I was telling you earlier. That's why gold is going to go up, 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 and silver is going to chase it, like the bodies dragged to the bottom by the sinking Titanic. Imagine the following scenario. You and I go to the grocery store to buy a dollar loaf of bread. Got that? Okay. Seriously, we know you can't even buy a muffin at that price. So let's say a $2 loaf of bread. Now, when you pay for your bread, you use a dollar from your wallet. When I pay for my loaf, I use a dollar from my Monopoly game money. Both dollars are accepted by the grocer, who in turn deposits both in the retirement account for our employees. By having non-par dollars, the immediate effect on the asset, that's the bread, is that I have effectively devalued it. But worse than that, much worse than that, when in the future the employees withdraw their retirement account, they'll have far less than expected because those Monopoly dollars don't count. They just take up room in the cash drawer. In fact, they have not just lost half, but the half less the unearnable return that they did not receive on the non-par dollar, the Monopoly dollar. And that's the good news. The bad news is that the Monopoly money actor, not investing for retirement or future returns, will liquidate their non-investment as a function of their extenuating need. not as a function of the asset appreciation. This yield decoupled sale would artificially flood supply onto the market and drive down the price, which means the store goes broke. In the case of the Fed, there is the added complexity in that they have competing financial instrument interests. Depending upon the timing of their sale of the treasuries or mortgages, their sale of one, given the fact that they are holding long-dated treasuries and long-dated mortgages, both the 30-year and et cetera, the price drag of their sales will decrease the book value and liquidity of pensions. You know, pensions, the thing you're putting your money into every week with your company, the 401k, the self-directed IRA, that, your Social Security benefits, insurance payment capacity, and other cash flow considerations of the average citizen, gone. In the panic of 1893, a lot of you don't know this, President Grover Cleveland turned to J.P. Morgan, I'm sure you know that name, to loan gold to the U.S. Treasury to keep it from collapsing in exchange for 30-year bonds with a 4% interest rate. 20 years later, that would be 1913. You remember that year, don't you? The war to end all wars? 20 years later, this private capital means of financing the public debt was institutionalized with the formation of the Federal Reserve. During the tumultuous time, private investors wielded considerable advantage as they not only owned the operation of the government, but they also controlled the means of production and commerce. That's the real productivity of the U.S. economy. Setting aside the morality of this dynamic, I know that's a bit hard to swallow, but bear with me. The good old days model concocted by J.P. Morgan and his allies was more robust than the unimaginative approach taken by the Fed today. Morgan could actually insure his repayment by aligning his self-interest to the industrial production of the country. But not anymore. By purchasing competing non-productive assets at equivalent durations, the Fed is doubling down on the exact same factors that triggered the GFC in the first place. Remember that the GFC, mislabeled a mortgage crisis, was the consequence of pairing consumer debt, access to cheap money second mortgages, actuarial risk with real estate asset risk. While the symptoms showed up looking like mortgage influenza, the actual virus was unsustainable Ebola debt-fueled consumption. By suppressing interest rates throughout contrived purchases and by effectively undermining real estate asset value, we're really building a bigger risk than the GFC of 2007-2008. In other words, the greatest financial collapse in the last century of 2008-2009, as the announcement that Barack Obama was going to win the presidency influenced our markets, is nothing. It is a walk in the sunny park compared to what is about to happen. There is a real value superstorm brewing, Earth explorers. While the leading bands of the storm will be filled with the windy bluster of debt ceiling posturing and reposturing, blaming and reposturing, the real eye of the storm is brewing around the paired devaluation effect of Fed balance sheet intervention. If unaltered, the resulting liquidity for pensioners, that's you, the insured, that's everybody, and investors alike, will directly harm the economy for the actuarial debt maturity horizon. Not the next year, not the next two or three quarters, for the next 30 years. Once again, it's time for each of you and those about whom you care to become more conscious about the harm being done by passivity in your investment management and start aligning the capital you steward to things that actually unleash the productivity of yourself and others. In other words, you investors out there, stop it. Stop investing in these stupid bonds and these stupid stocks and playing this stupid game on the stupid Dow, which has nothing to do with the productivity or the value of the United States of America. Stop it. Put your money into small business that is actually hiring people and doing things and building things. Start investing in the backbone of America or the back will break. And you know whose fault it will be? It will be yours, because you looked the other way and you thought about the greed. You thought about playing the gambling games with the Dow, the stupid Ponzi scheme that's run in New York and Chicago. Invest in the real America. Invest in private equity. Find a private company and doggone it, be a minority shareholder. Let's get this country moving again. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. More X Squared Radio coming at you.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Looking Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century. Well, I was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said, I was hoping it was a lie.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship fly in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one.
All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. That last piece from David Martin's blog. The blog is listed at X Squared Radio at x2-radio.com. And I'm thinking about putting that piece into the free listening area. So I want all of you to pay very, very close attention to that. If you miss some of it, go back and listen to the whole hour. It's very, very powerful. If you know private investors or you know investor class Americans, be sure to impress upon them the importance of investing their money in private corporations, private partnerships. Don't be afraid of being a minority shareholder, my friends, because you'll be a majority shareholder in America. the Dow is not a true representation of what's going on with this country. And the productivity of the United States of America is not reflected in the stock market. So be courageous and invest in America. It will pay off. Also, I want to impress upon you with all of my soul that this really is, you know, the greatest country, the greatest country experiment that's ever been done on the face of the earth. In fact, I think it's probably the best in several planetary systems. And those aren't idle thoughts and empty thoughts either. I'm just telling you myself. It can be lost, and it is being lost. Day by day, hour by hour, it is being dismantled by a courage and a confidence that is marching through freedom like a mowing machine. And it's mowing down the things that we have grown and the things that we have nurtured and planted and planned for in this country. This administration is beginning to mow down your retirement. The undersecretary of the Treasury, in an interview 2 weeks ago, was asked directly, are you or are you not going to come after the 401ks and private retirement accounts of the American people, which, by the way, Earth Explorers, is where not only the real value of the United States lies right now, it is the only value of the United States right now. It is all the savings that you have put in after decades and decades of slaving hard at jobs you don't like. Your employers have matched whatever their obligation is, and you have put part of your pay in there and watched the interest grow year after year. She said they are absolutely not going to do that, which, you know, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, they absolutely are doing it. And it is a double whammy, because not only are they going to take the money from you and give you an IOU, don't worry, the faith and credit of the United States is going to make your 401k account good when it's time for you to retire. The other whammy is they're devaluing the dollar that you put in there 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago, and they're devaluing it on a daily basis by printing $40 to $80 billion in worthless cash every single month as they counterfeit this money through the Fed and ship it to pay our bills by the truckloads, by the pallet loads, by the dump truck loads. All those dollars that you put in your 401k are reduced by the same value. I have advised you, and others have advised you, and maybe I'm more bold than others are, but I've gone out to the future and looked back at this point, and I'm telling you, cash in that 401k now. Convert it into hard metal and cash. And don't forget to keep your records, because if you spend that money on something over $10,000, you're going to be guilty of money laundering and you're going to go to prison. I know it's your own money, but if you can't prove where it came from, they're going to take it from you and they're going to take what you bought with it and they're going to put you in jail. All right. Let's move on to the third hour, X Squared Radio. I encourage you to be part of this topic tonight. I would love to open a discussion on this. Anywhere North America, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. Anywhere else, on planet or off planet, you can reach us at 530-413-9537, 530-413-9537. And let me say a good night to my friends at Truth Frequency Network. They are now signing off. They only carry the first 2 hours of the program. Also, this year, we are starting something new. We're taking one select hour per week, and we are posting it on the X Squared Radio YouTube channel. So you can listen to 1 hour a week listening on YouTube for free. And we'll put a little slideshow or something there with it, you know, so it's interesting to watch on your screen. But you could take that YouTube audio, I guess, and you can download it to your iPod. It's not all 3 hours, and we do cover 3 hours of highly interesting and pertinent stuff, which you don't need to miss. We're only on once a week. We do 3 hours a week. We do about 20 hours of research to bring you this information, and it's worth it. So I'm not going to waste your time being on every single day at the same time. There are other people that do that. And certainly the 800-pound gorilla does a good job late nights Monday through Friday. We are only on Sunday. It's our time here at X Squared Radio. And we encourage you to be here with us. All right, now we have a Wars R Us update. This is an article by John J. Zanakis. And he's with an organization called GenerationalDynamics.com. I encourage you to go to their website and check it out. I don't necessarily agree with Mr. Zanakis's article, but I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm going to fill in some pieces because it's important that you know what's going on out there. You're going to read some pieces on this, and you might not do as much research as I have done to find the alternative viewpoints, and you might get a little panicky, a little scared about it, and I don't want you to be. So it's good for you to be here in order to be informed. This might as well have been crafted by the folks down at Wars R Us, and I'm going to read the article and comment because there are some epic overestimations in this piece. All right, here we go. China's General Staff Headquarters issued a harsh directive on Wednesday of this week to the People's Liberation Army. You remember them? Now, we haven't heard much from them in a long time. They've been kind of quiet. Anyway, the directive is to prepare for war. Now, wait a minute. Well, hold on a second here. I mean, is this the same that, you know, when Marco Polo sailed up the river into China, he was so in awe that he commented in his journals, it's a good thing China's not warlike, because if they were, they could take over the entire world. China's a pretty magnificent country. I've been there several times. I've visited lots and lots of cities in China. I've seen their farming. I've seen their factories. I've seen their works of art. I've seen their sporting events. It is a wonder to behold. But to prepare for war? In 2013, the goal set for the entire army and the People's Armed Police Force is to bolster their capabilities to fight and their ability to win a war. To be well prepared for a war by subjecting the army to hard and rigorous training on an actual combat basis. Although past directives have directed soldiers to be prepared in case of war, this year's directive for the first time uses the Chinese word dasheng, which means fighting war, and uses it 10 times in the 1,000-word directive. Last month, China announced plans to board and seize foreign ships in the South China Sea starting in 2013 and has been conducting naval drills with warships in preparation. While the official directive doesn't mention Japan specifically, various commentaries make it clear that Japan is the would-be adversary. We have already heard how Japan had paid for and bought a couple of islands that were within its purview. And immediately China has stepped forward and said, now wait a minute, those islands belong to us. Even though it was a legitimate real estate transaction and the sellers have already pocketed the cash, China has been sailing its warships up and down its fishing properties in a saber rattling methodology. Now, China's military budget has been increasing exponentially for years, and as I and others have reported, that this year it's finally paying off. China's military is deploying a large number of new warships, tanks, missiles, submarines, blah, blah, blah. These weapons include hundreds and perhaps thousands of mobile nuclear ballistic missile targeting various cities around the world. The thing that makes these so pesky is they're constantly moving. And that means that targeting systems that have to protect against those have to adapt to that. It was difficult to do even in World War II, as they would move V2 rocket sites around. They were hard to strike back at because they would move them under the cover of darkness or under thick cloud cover. And next thing you know, a rocket would be coming from this point or that jetty. So they have a strategy. They call it, flush with pride and confidence. Senior officials in China's People's Liberation Army are using increasingly hawkish and nationalistic rhetoric when discussing issues related to Japan or the United States. Some of these officers call for short, sharp wars to assert China's sovereignty, or to strike first, prepare for conflict, or what they say, kill a chicken to scare the monkeys. The United States has mutual defense treaties with Japan, Taiwan, the Philippines, and a number of other countries. The purpose of those treaties, of course, they were signed after World War II, was to discourage anyone from starting a new war, since anyone fighting a war with one of those countries would automatically have a war with, well, yours truly. Well, Dai Xu, a Chinese Air Force colonel, is arguing for a short, decisive war with one of China's neighbors, like Vietnam, the Philippines, or Japan. I think the latter would be a gross error in judgment, in order to establish sovereignty over the Pacific region without risking war with the United States. This is the kill a chicken to scare the monkeys philosophy. According to this theory, America will not honor its mutual defense agreements with any of these countries because, well, a couple of reasons. Number one, the U.S. will not want to risk having its cities destroyed by Chinese ballistic missiles, which I don't really think is a risk. And the other is, they are our creditors. We owe them money. They make our iPads and our cell phones. They make all the chips for our electronics, for everything from gaming to, well, military hardware. He uses as an example China's 1962 border clash with India, which China won decisively, leading to decades of peace. Since we have decided that the U.S. is bluffing in the East China Sea, we should take this opportunity to respond to these empty provocations with something real. That includes Vietnam, which, if you live in the Eastern Seaboard, you'll know this. A few decades ago, textiles moved from Boston and the area up around Boston on the river. Textiles moved to the south, to Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, as did the furniture industries. They moved south because, well, land was cheaper and labor was cheaper. And we had all the same natural resources that they do, other than the hardwoods. Most of the hardwoods are still located up there, but that's easy enough to transport. And so residing down here and building the economy for a number of decades, everything was hunky-dory. Until, probably about 10 or 12 years ago, it happened again. Only this time, furniture and textiles went overseas. Where did they go? Well, they went to China. And they resided there for a while. And actually, it was a very short while. Because the quality of the workmanship was so bad, and the reliability of the shipments and performance of the labor and the logistics in that area were so bad that companies that relocated from here to there pulled up stakes and moved to Vietnam. And guess what? The economy boomed. The quality came way up. The furniture that we started getting back from Vietnam, the textiles that we got back from Vietnam, were top drawer, top rate. And now U.S. companies have been moving back to Vietnam in a big way. And the Vietnamese government is very happy to be doing business with the United States of America. South Korea as well. They're doing well. We're doing well. The profits are great. The reliability is good. The quality is good. We've been in the Philippines for 50 years. We've been in Japan for 50 years. Just say the words Toyota, Honda. You know what we're talking about. The best quality in the world. So, these three countries, Vietnam, Philippines, and Japan, are our allies, and they are our business partners. And the Chinese consider these the three running dogs of the United States. We only need to kill one, and it will immediately bring the others to heel. As one Chinese analyst put it, the Americans will run like rabbits. Another one said, if there is a clash in the South China Sea, the possibility that foreign countries would intervene is low, and any conflict would not last long. Well, is this China's historic mistake? Well, history is so interesting. We're analyzing this because I believe that we are about to witness an epic event. Anyone who understands even a little generational theory can quickly understand that China is making a historic mistake. However, it's going to be a disaster for everybody. China's 1962 border clash with India did not lead to a wider war because the countries were in a generational awakening era, with both countries being run by survivors of World War II and respectively Mao's communist revolutions, civil war, and the bloody Hindu-Muslim war that followed partition. Each of these wars were extremely brutal, creating tens or even hundreds of thousands of refugees. Today, they just don't want that to ever happen again. Today, China, India, and America are in a generational crisis era, not an awakening era. The survivors of World War II, they're gone. Those lessons are history. Today's leaders have had an easy life. Come on. You golf 140 rounds of golf in a year. You take 85 days vacation. What could be easier than that? Where the worst crisis was a sex scandal? Are you kidding me? They have no personal memory of the horrors of World War II. And the Generation Xers think that any older generation who even talks about it, well, they're just completely full of crap. The Chinese, as well as many Americans, believe that President Obama would not strike back if China launched one of these short, sharp wars. And that is a common mistake that leaders have assumed. They believe that he'd be like Neville Chamberlain after Hitler attacked Czechoslovakia. Hitler said, look, I'm only trying to unite the German-speaking peoples. You don't have a dog in this fight. You know, they needed to be conquered. They needed to be united. Neville Chamberlain said, we have peace in our time. China today is giddy. They're giddy with military power to the point of mass hysteria, and they're extremely overconfident. But make no mistake, they are ready for war, and they're anxious to go to war. They have a military strategy of attacking America's weak points, like take your pick in alphabetical order, that they believe will lead them to a very quick victory because America won't risk having its cities attacked. True, we've never been bombed. The only time we've ever been bombed, we bombed ourselves. Nothing could be further from the truth. However, generational dynamics predicts that when China makes its move, and that day seems very close, then the war won't end until every nuclear weapon on all sides has been launched. And this is where I disagree with John. I don't think that will happen. The folks down at Wars R Us have done their best to get you ready for paying for another war. This time, they suppose, we will not be facing a ghost on a moped in a bathrobe. They claim we will be facing the Chinese army. Well, one thing every online gamer knows about warfare: armies have to eat. Marching armies have to eat more. and they have to take a dump. They're like cockroaches. They eat everything in their path, and they leave a trail of broken stuff and human excrement everywhere they go. And I don't have to tell you what that stuff smells like when the main diet is fish and rice. You get the idea? Here's the reality, folks. This is the reality, my fellow Earth explorers. China has a parade army. They can march in lines down the street, and they can make a sound very similar to marching for their psychotic military government. They have not been to war in nearly 50 years. They play. They make cheap electronics for our consumer markets. In other words, they pump our gas. And they export credit to the world. And they have made four epic miscalculations, which is why you have nothing to worry about at all from China. Number one, their debtors are going to file bankruptcy. And when they do, all those bonds are worthless. They can never collect the debt because they have no collateral other than the faith and credit of the United States of America. How strong is your company when your customers file bankruptcy on you? Can you go to the bank and borrow money? No. Could you launch a major offensive anywhere? No. Can you follow through with all those trade shows that you want to do and building product to send out to your dealerships? No. Because your customer filed bankruptcy on you. You loaned them too much money. You let them have too much credit. And they went under. And when you have announced that your debtor is your enemy, the likelihood of ever getting paid back drops back to 0.0%. Number two, China has no natural resources. The price of oil is a very effective weapon against the Chinese because they have to buy and import about 90% of their oil. Oh, they have coal, but you've already seen what happens to Shanghai, the world's largest mega city, when they fire up the coal-fired power plants. It's a choking, nasty mess. You go to their cities and you go up in their high rises, their hotels, their office buildings, and you can't see out the windows on a clear day because the glass has been acid etched by pollution. They manufacture 95% of the world's solar and wind power, but they don't use it themselves. They sell it. If they need to move something, they will be doing it with pedal power, not gasoline. They don't have an interstate system, so they can't move things from region to region by roads. They don't make their own cargo planes, so they're out of luck if they want to upgrade their logistics command. Number three, they have no ability to mass produce food. Their farming system is the poorest equipped among any developed country. Even South Africa has better farming systems than China. Without mass produced food and protected food storage abilities, they cannot support an army for more than about 2 weeks, which means they're going to try to consume things along the way. A miscalculation that Mr. Hitler made when invading Russia. And number four, and this is the one that will save us all. It will save the world from a war like China. It is never going to happen. China has a 500 million people working in prison factories. 12-hour days, 7 days a week, for nothing more than food, clothing, and a place to live. They make your iPads and iPhones. They make your car stereos. They make the instrument panels for your automobiles. They make the chips in your airplanes. They make all that stuff, and there is no pride of ownership. There is no retirement plan. There is no ability to relocate. Also, in addition to imprisoning the poor uneducated people working in their factories. They have also imprisoned their considerable population of billionaires. They cannot leave the country either. Their families cannot leave the country. They will never see Disney World or Disneyland. They will never see a NASCAR race. They will never see Wimbledon. They will never go to Pinehurst and see a golf tournament. They can never enjoy the Rocky Mountains or the Grand Canyon. And they're billionaires. They're some of the world's wealthiest people. They also cannot export their money from China. All of that is governed by the central military leadership. Remember, Benjamin Franklin once said, you cannot arrest a society. The poor and the rich in China are in prison. When and if they decide to go to war, there's going to be a prison break of global proportion, and China will collapse from within. The Chinese army will die like maggots on a hot sidewalk once they get out of range of the nearest noodle shop. Japan and Taiwan are armed at sea. They're armed on their land with anti-missile systems. And they're also armed in space to deal with China's horde mentality. China owns the world with debt. They can't conquer it as well. Sometimes stories are written and movies are produced to try to give us a heads up, you know, kind of make us aware of things. You remember back in 1984, there was a film that came out, Patrick Swayze. You remember? It was one of the early full-length movies with Martin Sheen in it as well. The original movie was called Red Dawn. It was a 1980s classic. I've seen it a couple times on TV. Well, they remade the movie. This original one was directed by Dan Bradley. Anyway, they report that the original villain, when they first started shooting this new film, was the Chinese invading America. Already updated from Russia, you know, the 1984 film. The filmmakers now have been required to digitally erase Chinese flags and military symbols from the new remake of Red Dawn, substituting dialogue and altering the film. The decision was apparently made by MGM alone. Quote, no one at the studio has had discussions with Chinese government officials about Red Dawn. Close quote. Which means we've had discussions with the Chinese government officials about Red Dawn. Over the past few years, the box office in China has become a key place to make strong earnings, which is why you see films like The Karate Kid working with them. In business terms, this is just them watching out for their product. You remember the latest Karate Kid takes place in China. It's a good movie. It's really well done. Will Smith's boy is in it, and he does a fantastic job. By the way, it's not his first movie. I had somebody tell me that. He was also in The Day the Earth Stood Still, the one made with Keanu Reeves. He was a much younger son of Will Smith. And, you know, kind of a little bit abbreviated role for him. But he has certainly developed as a fine young actor. But that movie took place in China. Well, they were initially very reluctant to make any changes, says Trip Vinson, one of the producers. But after careful consideration, we constructed a way to make a scarier, smarter, and more dangerous Red Dawn than we believe improves the movie. You certainly hope so. While we know what the film is about, we haven't seen a trailer. Well, we have. The movie's out now, and it hasn't done that well, actually. And I don't think it's the backlash of taking China out and making it into North Korea. Don't think that's it at all. I think the original screenplay, when it was written, in the 80s was to keep us aware of this Cold War that was going on and always had the possibility of becoming a hot war. Well, we haven't had a Cold War for a while, unless you consider the one between the American citizens and its own government, which is ongoing, as we can see this gun argument has been going on and on and on and has been escalating. And I doubt very seriously that it will become a hot war. It doesn't need to. It can take care of all this just by exercising constitutional common sense. But when the original screenplay was altered or rewritten for this modern day with modern special effects, it was written for a reason, with China being the aggressor. It certainly goes along with what we have read from John's article here. And possibly for the economic reasons of the Chinese market, which might see the movie, I don't think that they're going to be less offended that it's North Korea instead of China doing the invading of North America. But the fact that the film has been changed from the screenplay means that somebody made a phone call. The fact that the screenplay was written at all is trying to tell us something is going on. Just to keep you aware and awake. No fear. All right. The report is now in. Going to space does not shorten your lifespan. Buzz Aldrin, who along with Apollo 11 astronaut Neil Armstrong boldly walked where no one had been before in 1969, is marking his birthday on the road with a trip to England. This month, Aldrin helped launch the Axe Space Academy, a private spaceflight competition that aims to launch 22 people on suborbital space flights as part of a deal. You try talking for 3 hours and see what your mouth does. As part of a deal with the space tourism company Space Expedition Curacao, an Xcor Aerospace, which is building the Lynx space plane to be used on the flights. I think it would be a jazz to take that flight, don't you? To go up to about 120,000 feet low orbit and then come back in. Space travel for everyone is the next frontier in the human experience, Aldrin said during the project's launch this month. But Buzz Aldrin is likely most well known for his role on NASA's Apollo 11 mission, which made the first man moon landing on July 20th, 1969, when Armstrong landed on the moon and performed the first moonwalk. Aldrin served as lunar module pilot for the Apollo 11 mission, with Armstrong commanding the mission. Astronaut Michael Collins, meanwhile, served as the command module pilot and remained in orbit around the moon during the landing, and Armstrong died at the age of 82 last year. But Buzz Aldrin is now 83 and still going strong. So these two astronauts have had long lives, even though they have walked on another planet well outside the magnetosphere and the Van Allen radiation belts. So don't let anybody tell you that it can't be done and that you're going to be hurt in any way. And for those of you that are looking for extra money along these same lines, there is a space contest going on. And you don't even have to leave the comfort of your own laptop. NASA engineers want to squeeze as much power as possible from the wing-like solar arrays on the International Space Station. And the agency has launched a software contest to make it happen. They just announced this just a couple of days ago. Today is the 20th. They announced this on the 17th. So there's still time. And there's good money in it. I always like a contest that has good money in it. The space agency is sponsoring a $30,000 competition to optimize the position of the station's 8 solar arrays during certain parts of its orbit using a software algorithm. The goal is to maximize power output and minimize shadowing of what they call the longerons, the long arms holding the arrays to the station, which are sensitive to temperature changes. With more power at hand, astronauts aboard the $100 billion orbiting lab can perform more experiments, increasing the station's scientific returns. contest organizers said. And there's a lot of cool stuff happening with the International Space Station. You can go to a website, which is called heavensabove.com. Now, if you want to go there, it's not all one word, so be careful. It's heavens-above, heavens-above.com. Go there. It's free to register. Create a username and a password. Put in your coordinates, which can be the city that you live in. And then you can click on what the ISS link, that's short for International Space Station. And when you click on that link, it will tell you when the space station is going to come over your neighborhood and from which direction it's going to approach. You need to know this because it's only going to be visible for about 2 minutes, and then it's going to pass overhead. Now, the thing to pay attention to with the numbers is the more negative they are, the brighter the object. So if you see like a minus 3.6 for the International Space Station coming over your neighborhood at, let's say, 11.05 p.m. Tonight, that means coming from the northwest. That means you can go out in a cloudless sky and you could see the International Space Station pass overhead. And it's really something, because if you've never actually looked up and seen it go overhead, you're going to be amazed. I mean, you're going to be shocked how big this thing is and how bright it is at a minus 3.6. Most people never look up. They just never see it going overhead. You can not only see it with the naked eye, you can almost see the solar array with the naked eye. If you have a pair of binoculars, you will really be amazed. And if you've got a video camera and you can get this thing in the viewfinder and zoom in on it, you could take pictures of that thing as it's going overhead, a long motion picture of a minute or 2 minutes, and show it at home. I have actually put night vision goggles on the front of my camera, holding them with my hands, and zoomed in on the International Space Station as it went overhead with the Russian supply ship close in tow behind it. It was really spectacular, just really something to behold. So I encourage you, go to heavens-above.com, sign in, put in your coordinates, and take a look. By the way, that website also lists dozens of other satellites that come over all the time. You can see the Heavenly Palace, which is the Chinese space station that's been launched. And if you're really good and got a nice, clear, dark sky, you can even see the X-37B, which is the Air Force's secret space plane that goes overhead on a regular basis. They track almost everything. It's free. And it works everywhere except for in Tibet or China. You can't put in your coordinates there because it doesn't work. Those areas are blacked out. They don't give the information outside the U.S. or outside free territories. By the way, just came in, a sinkhole seismic event has occurred. Scientists believe the restless 8.5-acre sinkhole in Assumption Paris swampland is undergoing a growth event after they noticed an upswing in seismic activity over the past few days within a brine mining cavern carved into the massive Napoleonville Dome, Paris officials said Saturday. That is really something. Officials first began noticing an increase in seismic activity about 2 weeks ago, said John Baudreau, director of the Assumption Paris Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness. Scientists reported that more than 80 seismic events were monitored 2 days ago. There was a tremendous amount of activity over the past couple of days. The sinkhole then burped up crude oil, debris, and hydrocarbons to its surface about 10 a.m. yesterday morning. After the burp, the seismic activity decreased dramatically. Officials believe the sinkhole formed near the Grand Bayou and Bayou corn communities sometime between the night of August 2nd and the morning of August 3rd. Scientists believe the sinkhole is linked to the failure of nearby Texas Brine Company LLC's salt cavern in the Napoleonville Dome. The dome, a large underground salt formation, was pushed up vertically from ancient seabeds, and for decades, industry has used the dome for brine production, salt water. The perimeter has also been the focus of intensive oil and gas exploration. They pump the brine out of this dome and pump it back into the ground to force the oil to the holes and then recover the oil and salt solution and easily separate the salt solution from the oil. That's how it's done. Hollowed from the salt, solid salt formation, caverns left by brine production are often used later for storage of natural gas, butane, and other hydrocarbons. Brine is used for several industrial processes. Louisiana Department of Natural Resources scientists have said they suspected that the Texas brine cavern failed, allowing its saline fluid to gush out and open up the sinkhole. Residents of 150 homes in the two communities were evacuated, and officials believe the recent growth event is centered on the east side of the sinkhole and possibly is related to shifting of salt material within the cavern collapse zone. Lots of stuff going on under the ground, and some people believe that the crust is expanding at a steady rate, and it reaches points where structures near the surface tend to, through tectonic vibrations, I'm not going to say plate shifting, because there are doubts that tectonic plate subduction is even a legitimate geological process. It's a great theory, but we haven't really had enough time to watch it to actually see it happen. But these kinds of vibrations that occur do open up structures like honeycomb weaknesses in the crust, and then they fill in with various things, magma, water, sometimes it's oil, and sometimes it's just air. And when that happens, the surface becomes unstable and caves in, and that's where these sinkholes occur. This sinkhole is about 1,400 feet in diameter. Wilma Subra, an environmental chemist who provides technical assistance to the Louisiana Environmental Action Network, or LEAN, said that while officials have noticed growth in the sinkhole after seismic activity in the past, this round of activity is concerning because of the severity, as evidenced by Texas Brine's cracked well pad. This issue is that it may go even further and have an impact on the integrity of the well bore. And if that happens, we've got a serious problem on our hands. All kinds of liquid movement occur and cause instability. There have been a couple of stories about the lithium batteries in the new 787 Dreamliner. It's unclear what that problem actually is. There was a report that that the lithium became unstable due to high voltage, but they measured the voltage history with the flight data recorder, and it never varied from the design of 32 volts. So it wasn't high voltage that caused the lithium ion batteries to go into thermal runaway, which appears to have caused a fire inside the battery cavity itself. Now, you know, can't go back to lead acid because it's too heavy, takes up too much room, and it doesn't fit with the design of the airplane. It has to be a high watt density, lightweight battery like a lithium battery. Although, I don't know if they're using lithium iron phosphate. They may be using the old style lithium manganate, which is prone to thermal runaway. It is unclear as to whether there were any what's called zinc air solutions attempted. Now, military planes do use zinc air batteries. They have a way of processing the electrolyte on the ground for a rapid recharge, sort of like kidney dialysis for a battery. And zinc air batteries can be recharged by the normal means, you know, plugging them in and using a battery charger and charging them back up. But it's just the same speed that any other battery would recharge. so that you kind of lose the advantage of it being a zinc air battery in the first place. Most people just pump out the old electrolyte, pump in the fresh electrolyte, and you're good to go, back ready for another mission. I don't think that's been tried with the Dreamliner. I think this battery pack needs to be modified. It will shortly. Boeing's not going to go broke. This happens all the time with new designs, and I think that it's perfectly plausible to use a lithium battery in the Dreamliner. Wouldn't worry about it if you ever have a chance to fly on one. Do it. Got some MK Ultra stuff, but I don't want to talk about it. There's a couple other things about China. I think we've had enough Chinese for one night, don't you? You know, too much Chinese, it's bad for you. You know, you need to have some solid food. I do want to remind you that the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition is still on schedule for this summer. We have a crowdfunding event that's going on right now that you could participate in with as little as $10. All you have to do is go to Indiegogo.com, or you can go to NPIEE.org. NPIEE stands for North Pole Inner Earth Expedition.org. And the widget is right there on the front page. You can participate in that. Or you can go to Indiegogo.com, put in the search words North Pole, North Pole. If you do that, Indiegogo, by the way, is IndieGogo.com. If you put that in, you can get there. Grab the widget. Do me a favor. Grab your email database, your Facebook, your Twitter. Stick that embed for the widget in there and send it out. Let's get this thing viral. You don't have to put any money in it if you don't have it. If you do have it, we'd appreciate your support. Because if we can reach that $700,000 goal, we can put the deposit on the ship. We put the deposit on the ship. It holds 124 passengers. There's a crew of 150. Then we can make a global announcement that we are definitely on. We're not going to make a global announcement like that with confidence unless we can put the deposit down on the ship. That's just the way we do business at the Phoenix Science Foundation. So I want you to participate in that. Spread that far and wide. Let's get that thing out there, and let's reach this goal. We have about 27 days left. There's plenty of time, and it can be done. There are certainly enough enthusiasts out there who love the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, and they want to see it happen. You are probably one of them. So help us out and get that Indiegogo.com widget out there to everybody. Okay? Let's make it happen. Also, income tax checks are getting ready to come in. Last year we were telling you about a conference that was going to take place down in Chichen Itza. It didn't. As far as we are concerned, it canceled out. It did carry on because the folks down at Power Places weren't going to back out. But I understand that it was an area disaster, not just for Power Places, but for all of the companies that tried to capitalize on the Maya calendar phenomena down there at what we call Ground Zero for 2012. So I will do a better job this year. I think we have a better program for you. If you want to participate in the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, we are not selling seats. Okay, that's not the way this scientific expedition needs to take place. However, because we have access to a larger ship with the ability to carry 24 more passengers above and beyond our original design of 100, we are using those 24 seats as perks in the Indiegogo crowdfunding effort. So you have an opportunity for about a 70% discount, 70% discount to go with us on the ship. All you have to do is go to Indiegogo.com and read about the details. There's plenty to do there, lots of good information. And we'll change it up every few days, new pictures and new things. We don't want to make it too big and too complex. Who spends a lot of time going through these crowdfunding write-ups anyway? But the main thing is to grab that widget and get it out there. The other way to participate is to buy the DVD. If you go to Amazon.com, you can buy the DVD of the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition Part 1, which was filmed on location at Mount Shasta in Tibet. There's some original footage, which we shot on location. It's never been seen anywhere except that DVD. And if at some of my lectures that we gave around the world recently. So you can go there and you can buy that. It's $20, virtually all the money, except for the shipping and handling, which is like, I don't know, $4 or something. All the money goes toward the expedition. So if we can sell 1,000 of those, we also can get very close to making this deposit on the ship. See what you can do, my friends, and we will see you right here at X Squared Radio next week. Same time, same place. Thanks so much for being part of X Squared Radio. We'll see you next week.